Well, have you met God? Have you met God? And if you haven't met God, do you want to meet God? Moses, in our reading from Exodus, he met God. It happened when he saw something strange one day in the wilderness. When you see something strange, you want to go and have a closer look, don't you? You catch something out of the corner of your eye. You then take a longer look. If it still looks strange, you want to go over and see what's going on. And that's what happened to Moses. This all happened quite a few years after the events from chapter 2, which those of us who were here, we heard about those events last week. Chapter 2, Moses was forced to flee far away from Egypt, where he'd grown up. And then at the start of chapter 3, which is where we're up to today, it's the big number 3, if you've got your Bibles there, Moses had been in this faraway land of Midian for 40 years. He'd married, he'd had children, he'd been living with his wife's family all that time. And when we pick up the story, we find Moses out with his father-in-law's sheep, grazing them near a mountain on the far side of the wilderness from where he lived. And he catches sight of something. Something catches his eye. And he didn't know it yet, but this is what was happening from verse 2. There the angel of the Lord appeared to him in flames of fire within a bush. Moses saw that though the bush was on fire, it did not burn up. And so, naturally, verse 3, Moses thought, I will go over and see this strange sight, why the bush does not burn up. And he goes over to take a closer look. And then, verse 4, when the Lord, who as we will see is God, when he sees Moses coming, he calls from the bush, Moses, Moses. And so begins a meeting that will forever change Moses' life and will change the life of the whole nation of Israel and more. This meeting, in many ways, sets in motion the story of Exodus. Moses, meet God. The meeting starts off in a fairly intense way. It's not a casual meeting. Verse 5. Do not come any closer, God said. Take off your sandals, for the place where you are standing is holy ground. And when I went to a tangi at Tuahiwi Marae recently, I took off my shoes before going in. And in the Middle East, where the Exodus event took place, it's still common to take off your shoes to show respect for a sacred place. Moses needed to do that here, because this was holy ground. Not because of the place itself, but because of the holy God whom Moses was meeting. And where this holy one is, nothing impure or sinful can enter. Moses couldn't come any closer, and he had to take off his sandals because this was very serious holiness. And Moses knew it. If you look at verse 6, God says that he's the God of Moses' ancestors, of his father, and of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Then it says, Moses hid his face because he was afraid to look at God. Moses responds to this holy God with absolute reverence, even a certain fear, a recognition that this God is pure and holy and powerful as well. He could wipe us out in a second, and he'd actually have every right to do so. Reverence is the only reaction Moses can have when he's confronted with God's holiness, because when you come across something holy, you're reverent. And I wonder, I've thought to myself as I've looked at this week, if we could use a bit more of this reverence for a holy God. This awareness of God's utter holiness and our need to be humbled by him, I think sometimes we lack it. I remember when I first became a Christian, there's a lot of the older Christians around me who seemed to really get this. They had a real sense of respect for God. Some of them oozed reverence. Not that they were joyless or boring. They weren't. Joylessness and reverence are not the same thing. Reverence isn't about what style of music you sing in church or about how serious or down you look. It's not about that. But these older Christians I'm thinking of, they were full of joy that they were forgiven and had become God's children through Jesus. But they had an awe, an amazement that sinners like them could be in the presence of a holy God. And they had a real humble and amazed joy about them. And they expressed that reverence in the way they talked, the way they prayed, the way they were passionate to live in grateful obedience to God. And I do think we could use a little bit more reverence like that. I know I could. Reverence like Moses showed that day when he met God. Because Moses realized that God is holy. But when Moses met God, he also found that God is faithful. Look at verse 7. The Lord said, I have indeed seen the misery of my people in Egypt. I've heard them crying out because of their slave drivers, and I'm concerned about their suffering. We saw last week the Israelites were crying out in their suffering under murderous oppression and slavery in Egypt. And we saw then that God heard them. He remembered his promises. He looked on them. And he knew and was concerned about their situation. And so here in verse 7, God says, I have seen what's happening to you. I've looked on the Israelites and I've seen them. I've heard their cries. I'm concerned about their suffering. And just before that, in verse 6, he introduced himself as the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, who are the people that he made promises to. So he'd remembered his promise and his commitment to them. See, these things that we saw last week, God's restating them here. He's making it clear to Moses. And so, verse 8, because he's heard and he's remembered and he's seen, he's come down to do something. Their cries went up to God, and God has come down to act. He's going to rescue them and take them to a new land, a great land. He's acting on his promise, his covenant, his commitment to the Israelites. He's doing something about it because he is faithful. Therefore, he can be trusted. Because when someone is faithful, you can trust them. We need to be reminded of that as well. He is holy, but he's faithful. He's still the same faithful God who sees the hardships of his people. He's still the same faithful God who sees their suffering. He knows when it's hard. He hears. He cares. God is faithful. So now, Moses has met God, holy and faithful. But God does a little thing in verse 10 which changes the conversation. God has a way of doing that, doesn't he? Changing the conversation. He's come down to rescue his people, but look at what he says in verse 10. So now go. I am sending you to Pharaoh to bring my people, the Israelites, out of Egypt. Moses, I'm sending you. Now that worries Moses a little bit. So verse 11, he asks, who am I that I should do this? It's a fair question. After all, Moses has been a shepherd for the last 40 years. And he's being sent to Pharaoh, who was probably the most powerful man in the world at that time, to bring the Israelites out of slavery, to say, hey, can you let your workforce go, please? They need to go out of slavery. It's quite a big ask on a shepherd. But verse 12, God reminds him that it is God who will be with him. After all, Moses is standing in front of a bush that's on fire but not burning up. And this isn't just some party trick like the relighting birthday candles that burn your fingers when you try to put them out. This is something much more significant than that. This is a symbol of the presence of the holy and faithful God, the God who's going to be with Moses as he goes to do this. See, Moses is being sent, but it's God who will do it. He will bring his people out. And as it says in verse 12, he'll bring them back to the same mountain and they will worship God there. So Moses asks another question, verse 13. He says, when I go to the Israelites and I tell them you've sent me, what should I say your name is? Now that's a fair question as well in a way. Remember, Moses has been away from his people for 40 years. Why would they listen to him? Maybe if he can tell them God's name, they'll listen to him. Because names were a big deal back then. They still are sometimes. For some of us, we named our first daughter Esther because it means star and is the name of a great queen of the Bible. And we named our second daughter Lucy because it means bringer of light, and we hope that she'll bring light to many people, above all the light of Jesus. Names are important sometimes today. They were even more important in biblical times. They were understood to reveal the character of a person. So Moses asked God, what's your name? Moses, meet Yahweh. Meet Yahweh. That's the divine name that God gives here. But before he declares that name to Moses, he sort of gives it some context and some meaning. So look at verse 14 with me. God said to Moses, I am who I am. This is what you're to say to the Israelites. I am has sent me to you. God calls himself, I am who I am. And then he shortens it to simply, I am. And in verse 15, he carries on. God also said to Moses, say to the Israelites, the Lord, the God of your fathers, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob, has sent me to you. So there he calls himself the Lord. So what is his name? Is it I am who I am? Is it I am? Or is it the Lord? And the answer is yes. So stay with me, it makes sense in the end. See, first of all, he calls himself I am who I am, and then he shortens that to I am. That's simple enough. But what does the Lord have to do with it? When you see the Lord written in capital letters, like it is there in verse 15, that means the word in the original Hebrew language is Yahweh. Yahweh. And that's the personal name of God in the Old Testament. So whenever you're reading the Old Testament, any part of the Old Testament, the part before Jesus came, part of the Bible before Jesus came, and you see the Lord written in capitals, the word there is Yahweh. Incidentally, that's where the name Jehovah comes from. You might have heard the name Jehovah. It's a different way of spelling Yahweh based on the same Hebrew letters, but it's probably not quite as accurate as Yahweh. We used to think it was right, but it's probably not quite right. Probably Yahweh. Now, the name Yahweh sounds a lot like the Hebrew word for I am. They're very similar sounding. Yeh, Yahweh, which in Hebrew sound very similar. And the footnote in my Bible says that, and probably does in yours too. So there's a play here on God's name. His name is Yahweh, which is like I am who I am. And the point is, just like my daughter's names have a meaning that are intentional, so does the name of the Lord. The end of verse 15, he says, this is my name forever, the name by which I'm to be remembered from generation to generation. So this is a very important name. He's making a very important point here. Moses has been introduced in a very personal way to the God of the universe as Yahweh. He's being shown something deep and profound about that name and what it means. He's being shown what it says about who God is. See, God is the one who can say, I am who I am. He's the one who is in control of himself and of everything else. He is who he is. You can't change him. Nothing can control him. Lots of things impact and change you and me as human beings. We like to think we're in control, especially us in the West. We're not as in control as we think we are. I am who I am, not just because that's what I want to be, but also because of my parents, my culture, my genes, my experiences, the things that have happened to me. All of those influence me, and much of it is out of my control. I didn't choose who my parents are. I didn't choose many of those things. But for Yahweh, that's not the case. He is in complete control. He can't be controlled by anyone else or by the circumstances. He is in charge. He is the great one, the authoritative one. He is, therefore, the holy one who is different to us, holy, above, great. And all we can do before him is humble ourselves and shut our mouths because he is who he is. He is holy. But also when he says, I am who I am, there's more. Because did you see there in verse 15, again he emphasizes that he, Yahweh, is the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. He's already said that. He's saying it again and saying it in connection with his name. And that's a reminder that he's the one who keeps his promises. He made promises to these patriarchs, that's what we call them, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. He made promises to them. And he's reminding Moses of that because he keeps his promises. He can truly say, I am who I am, because he's in control in his holiness. And therefore, he can be entirely trusted to be consistent to his promises. Because he's in control, because he's in control and he is holy, he can therefore be trusted to be consistent and to keep his promises, because he has the power to do what he promised. And most importantly, he has the faithful character to keep his promises. Us humans, again, we don't always keep our promises. I can think of promises right now that I've broken. I'm sure you can too. Yes, you can. You can, so. We can all think of promises we've broken. We don't keep our promises, and sometimes it's because we change our mind. Sometimes it's because we forget we made the promise. That happens to me too often. Sometimes it's because we're not able, we're not powerful enough to do what we promised. It's beyond our ability. But God said, I am who I am, because he is always the same God. He's the one we can trust. He doesn't change his mind or go back on his promises. And he's always able to fulfill them. He is who he is yesterday, today, tomorrow. That's his nature. So you can trust him. So when he says, as he goes on to say in verses 16 to 22, that after this, he'll rescue the people from Egypt. And there'll be resistance from Pharaoh, but he'll overcome that. And the Israelites will come out of Egypt with plunder. When he says that, Moses can trust that that's what will happen, because he is holy, he is faithful, he is Yahweh. That was the God Moses met. It was the God who made promises to the Israelites, to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob and their descendants. But notice, all of this has been directed specifically to Moses and the ancient people of Israel, who were slaves in Egypt. This is the context of this. When we read the Bible, we've got to keep thinking, who are these promises made to? Well, what about us then, today? Well, something very interesting connected with this happens in the Gospels, the biographies of Jesus, at a number of points. And one of them is in the reading we heard from, that Sam read for us today, from John chapter 8. In John 8, Jesus was in an argument with some of the religious leaders, which was fairly common, and he ends up saying from verse 58, before Abraham was born, I am. Isn't that a strange thing to say? It's not very good English. But actually, it gets him in a lot of trouble, because the next verse, the Jews that he was arguing with pick up stones to stone him. That is, to throw stones at him until he's dead. And that's because they knew very well what he was claiming. He was calling himself the I Am. It is a direct reference to the part of Exodus we've looked at today, where God reveals himself to Moses as Yahweh, the I Am. Jesus was claiming to be the very incarnation of God. Yahweh, who appeared to Moses in the burning bush, has appeared to the whole world in Jesus. And having looked hard myself, having looked hard and critically at Jesus' life and his death and his resurrection, I've found there's no option but to accept this extraordinary claim. Jesus says he is the I Am. He is. So, world, meet Yahweh in Jesus. Because Jesus is the one who is holy. He can't be controlled. At the first Easter, the Romans and the Jewish leaders thought they had him under control in the ultimate way, by killing him. That's the best way to control someone. If you want to control them, that'll completely control them. But this was all part of his plan, and death could not hold Jesus down. He burst out of the grave. He can't be controlled, even by death. He is holy, so holy and great. So holy, in fact, that we should, in one sense, fear to come near him. We sometimes have this idea of Jesus, rightly, that he's warm, maybe he's got a lamb under his arm, you know, those kind of things. And there's a truth to that, but we should tremble in reverence before him as well. We see this often in the Bible. Over and over, his disciples are afraid in the face of his great power. And if you read through the book of Revelation, for instance, if you read it carefully, you'll be overcome by how powerful and how awesome Jesus is. He is so holy, we should be reverent. One of the ways that it applies is we should be reverent as he speaks to us. As we hear his word read and preached on Sundays, are you reverent towards him at that point? And not because, well, it'd be disrespectful to the preacher if I chatted or if I played on my phone or if I read a book or if I daydreamed. It's not about the preacher. It's rather because you are reverently, humbly listening to the Lord. Are you reverent before the Lord's word? Do you give the Lord time to hear his word during the week and to talk to him in prayer out of reverence? Because he is awe-inspiring. Because it's an absolute privilege to be able to listen to and speak to a God that's holy. He is holy. All we can do is bow down before him, take off our sandals, shut our mouths, and submit to him. Is that your attitude to him? But as well as holy, he is faithful. He's the one who promised us life, who stayed true to his word, and ultimately gave up his own precious, holy life in order to give us life. And so because he faithfully loved us that much, we can look to him when it's hard. He understands what it's like. He's promised he won't leave us suffering. And even more, his saving work has already started because he was raised to life, showing that he's defeated the power of death and of evil. And he sent his spirit as a down payment, a foretaste of the promises to come in eternity, showing that he is faithful. He cares for us. He's with us when it's tough. He died to forgive us from our guilt. This Holy One loves us that much. Are you remembering that when you're going through difficult times? Or when you feel the guilt of your failures, are you remembering that he is faithful? Even when we've been unfaithful, he will be faithful to us, to forgive us, to save us. Because in Jesus, we all meet Yahweh, the God of the universe, in all his fullness, holy, faithful. And in Jesus, we can introduce this holy, faithful God to the universe, to the world, to North Canterbury. Let's humble ourselves in reverence to this holy God and draw near in trust to this faithful God. I'm going to give us just a quiet moment to reflect on that before our holy and faithful God, and then we will sing Holy, Holy, Holy.